Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes National Book Award finalist Elliot Ackerman with his timely and unsettling novel set on the Turkish border with Syria. Dark at the Crossing was named one of the best books of the year by the Washington Post. Wednesday, February 7th at 7 p.m. More at theivybookshop.com or 410-377-2966.
From the Baltimore Sun, this is Roughly Speaking. I'm Dan Rodericks, Sun columnist. Thanks for joining us. This is episode 349 for Friday and the weekend of January 26th, 2018. Today on the show, what's your favorite comfort food for a winter weekend? A lot of people would quickly mention mac and cheese when I mentioned comfort food. Others might favor a stew, soup, or a savory pasta dish. Last night on Facebook, I asked this question and got a whole bunch of replies. Chicken soup, chili, navy bean soup, pinto beans and cornbread, shepherd's pie, matzo ball soup, beef burgundy. Let's see what else we have here. Bob Marino says, Jewish chicken in a pot, rich chicken broth, tender pieces of chicken, egg noodles, and a couple of matzo balls. Kurt Kalaya says, burgers cooked outside on the grill, especially when it's snowing and dark. It's a comfort because I thumb my nose at winter, knowing that it will soon be over, and I'll soon be listening to Joe Angel and the Orioles. Don Bartow says, spaghetti and meatballs and chicken roasted on a bed of winter vegetables, beef stew cooked in the oven, including mushrooms. Yes, shepherd's pie and chicken pot pie, curried lentil soup. I mean, I asked people for one comfort food. Don Bartow is more than comforted. He's overly comforted here. Lightly curried oyster stew served up by way of ladling it around a little mountain of mashed potatoes placed in the center of each soup bowl. An Eastern Shore Oyster Festival winner from the 1960s that lives on a little Baltimore Sun clipping tucked away in my wife's recipe box. Okay, and then Frankie Popolo says, beef stew. On this weekend episode of the show, John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant in Baltimore offers a comforting potato dish from his ancestral home in Ireland, while Henry Hong, the food nerd, suggests a chicken casserole passed down from his wife's grandmother. We started talking about this a couple of weeks ago during that long and really cold spell. Every morning I got up and I just like boiled water. I said, I'm going to cook something. I don't know what, but I'm going to get these pots going. It warms up the kitchen. It starts to warm up the house, steams up the windows.
Yes.
And you feel warm inside, even though you haven't done anything yet except boil water.
Yeah, it works.
So one day I decided at like 5:30 a.m. to make polenta.
La polenta.
Because I didn't want to waste the fuel.
5:30 in the morning.
5:30 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And another day I made lasagna. I started very early making lasagna for my son and my daughter. They were having a party.
So simple. Everyone can make.
And that warmed the house up.
It helps.
So cooking will warm you up and warm the house up.
Sort of the opposite of barbecue, where you want to get out of the house.
Yeah.
When it's hot.
Yeah.
You can cook in the house.
Right.
As
during
much
the winter.
As you can. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You keep the oven going and keep the something on top of the stove.
Well, I'm curious, during this cold spell, which was prolonged, did you cook something to get that effect, to warm yourselves up, to comfort yourselves during the cold? Did either of you do that?
Cooked a lot. I don't know if it was instinctive or what, but yeah. If it was instinctive just to gather food and just cook it in big pots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a bunch of that. All kinds of leftover soup in the fridge, now.
Yeah.
I made lentil soup.
Did you make lentil soup for the New Year's?
Lentil soup with spinach. And,
nice.
It was delicious. A little curry in it. And
nice, John.
Yeah.
So I asked you, what would you make on a winter day? Because actually, we were planning this show when it was like 12 degrees. It's a little warmer on this day when we're recording this, but it's going to get cold again this winter.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
A winter weekend approaches. You got to warm the house up. You want to comfort yourself. What would you make? That was the question. I'll start with you, John. What did you decide?
Well, I decided on going back to the Irish roots. And I
like when you do that.
I like making calcanin.
Colcannon.
Yeah, it's like a crazy Irish mashed potatoes, really, essentially. If we take it to the lowest common culinary denominator,
yeah,
it's really mashed potatoes. Colcannon in Irish means white-headed cabbage. It's kind of like a Savoy cabbage that's a little the curlier one. But you can use kale with it, too. And, you know, I love kale. I can put kale on everything.
See, it's mashed potatoes.
Yeah, so you're basically, you're boiling some potatoes, just getting them cooked. Then you take a skillet and you put butter. You need butter. You need a cow. Mm-hmm. For this particular thing. So you're taking butter and melting it. You saute leeks in it.
Oh, that sounds good.
If you like garlic, you could, but the Irish never knew that there was garlic before. And, you know, so you get the leeks going, and then you take either the cabbage or the kale that you've chopped up, mm-hmm. and you saute that in the butter with some salt, pepper, maybe a little bit of nutmeg, and then add some milk, a little touch of heavy cream if you like, and just get that all boiling good. So now your potatoes have already cooked, right? You got them cooked. They're in the colander. We'll put them in, the milled potatoes, the cooked potatoes.
Are the potatoes still whole, or have you mashed them?
I quarter them when I boil them. So I just take them, put them in there, and get the potato masher, and right in the pot with the cabbage and the butter and the milk, and you start mashing that all up. And then you add a little bit more
butter?
Milk and butter as you go. Okay, we're not finished with the butter. Butter, 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 all we see, butter, butter, see who comes. So once you got the whole kit and caboodle nice and hot, you put it out on plates or in bowls, and you always keep some softened butter. Butter, butter, butter. And you make a well right in the center of it and put a big blob of that butter in there, so it kind of starts going around. So in trying to keep the house warm while I do it, it's nice because it doesn't take that long to make this particular dish.
Right.
It's really warm, satisfying, but I usually always make a loaf of Irish brown bread while I'm doing it. So I have the oven going, I have that going, and then just dip in the brown bread and the mashed potatoes. Mm. It's awesome.
That sounds good. Colcannon, and we're going to offer the recipe in the notes with this podcast.
Yeah.
If you want to try making that. But it sounds pretty simple.
It is simple. And you can vary
nourishing because of the green. Whenever there's a green involved, it doesn't matter how much butter you use, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, you just go with that. I mean, when you're making the potatoes, you could throw in a couple parsnips in it. Mm-hmm. And so you just are changing the dynamics. And if you have any of it left over, put it into little cakes and then fry it in butter on either side. And there you go. And then have it with applesauce the next day. And the world is good.
Boy, that all sounds good, Johnny.
Yeah.
Brown bread. Does your brown bread have raisins in it?
It does not. The brown bread that we have over here in America that we think is Irish and it basically is a holiday bread that they would use over there. In Ireland, you would just use a nice coarse meal, flour, a little baking soda, salt, and buttermilk. And that's all you need with it. It's a quick bread.
Because you know when you say brown bread to me, having grown up in the Boston area.
Oh, yeah, I know that brown bread.
That's a different brown bread, and I believe it did have raisins in it sometimes.
That did. Yeah. And you would cook that in a water bath or bake it in a water bath in a coffee can.
Yeah, that's right.
Preferably a coffee can. Because it usually has molasses in it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's right. And it comes canned.
Yeah.
I haven't checked in a while, but when I was a kid, you could buy it in a can in Boston, and you'd have it with baked beans on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And maybe Frankfurters or hot dogs.
You have to have a hot dog.
Huh.
All of New England.
Is that that was a Saturday night supper?
A Saturday night supper.
Wow.
And my mother would bake beans in a real Boston baked bean pot, which is a great thing to have. And I don't know, 2-3 hours of that nice aroma in the house, that would warm you up too.
It did.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nothing like hot dogs and beans on Saturday night.
Especially homemade.
Nanny Shields, that's all she did.
Really? I'm curious about Henry's comforting winter food, winter dish. What did you select? A soup? I was guessing you would make a soup.
I know. I was gonna, but I figured...
No soup for you!
You made such great soups at your place.
And I did, actually. This past winter, I made a bunch of soups. Made kimchi jjigae, which is... You know, Korean kimchi soup.
Oh, so good.
The only food that's still the thought of which makes me salivate. I picked casserole, and we've talked about casserole pretty extensively, I feel like, over the years. But I don't know if I ever mentioned my wife. She has a couple of specialties that she just excels at, one of which is quiche. She's like some weird master of quiche. I'm no slouch, but she's really good at it. She just got it mastered, just the touch. So, but anyway, her grandma Glenna, which is on her father's side, gave her a recipe for chicken poppy seed casserole.
So, chicken poppy seed casserole, yes. Sort of like a chicken pot pie. No crust
in
on
a sense,
it. There's no crust.
It does sort of have a crust. She uses club crackers crushed up with some butter and some boiling liquid from the chicken.
Oh, she had me at the club crackers. Oh my God,
John,
that's so funny because I was like, because I have seen club crackers in the store. I was like, what is a club cracker? Yeah. They're really rectangular.
A little sweet, aren't they?
Yeah, man, they're so buttery tasting. Yeah. And like the texture is very particular. They are flaky and oh man.
Yeah.
So they're not good for like dipping, and they're not great like platforms because they're very.
Am I right? They're
delicate.
A little bit on the sweet side. They have some sugar in them or not?
There probably is some sugar in them. I don't think they're marketed as a sweet cracker though.
Okay,
but it does. Right. You're right. It does taste sweeter.
No, you're
richer.
More correct when you said it's buttery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she uses those in the base of the casserole?
No, that's crumbled up on top. So okay. That's like the topping to the casserole.
So what else is in there besides the chicken? And you mentioned poppy seeds.
The poppy seeds, which again, I think that might be the only time that I've had any homemade dish with poppy seeds. I've had them on bagels and like that's it.
Right.
Or maybe like some dessert pastry.
Yeah. Or there's a good muffin. Is it lemon poppy seed muffin?
Oh, yeah.
You ever had one of those?
So. Yeah.
They're good.
That's funny because as I was eating this casserole, I was like, how would you describe the flavor of a poppy seed? It's textural because the kind of teeny microscopic crunchy type thing, but it does have like this kind of
distinct flavor. But how do you describe that?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's like kind of not woody, but like
not nutty.
I don't know. It's got, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
Kind of
just to be careful, you're not being drug tested the next day.
That's yeah, right. Yeah. It will make it. You know, even a small.
I once wrote a story about a nurse who. Did not pass a drug test because she had had a poppy seed bagel.
Yeah.
Within, I don't know, a few hours of the test.
I think there's an episode of Seinfeld about that. Elaine.
Is there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, she did.
But anyway, this recipe actually has got kind of a combo of classic like 50s, 60s style convenience casserole. So it does use Campbell's cream mushroom soup as a base, which if you look at the ingredients, it's got some processed stuff like, you know, hydrolyzed vegetable protein and stuff like that. But it's a bechamel sauce, really. It's a ready-to-go bechamel sauce. It's flour. I'm serious.
Henry, you are something.
It is.
You know, as refined as Henry is, as sophisticated he is, as a student of the science of cooking as he is, he'll open that can of cream of mushroom soup. He's an everyman.
Well, that's science
really.
In a can.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean,
and
yeah.
I've tried... very early on in our relationship, I was like, cream mushroom soup.
Yeah.
If you love the casserole soup, start with a bechamel.
Make
it's
your
easy.
Own bechamel. Yeah.
It's not the same. It's just not the same. So cream mushroom soup. Let Sarah make it. She uses chicken thighs. She usually get the boneless because it's easier.
Okay, but it's the whole thigh.
The whole thing, and then you poach them, and then you cut them into chunks, and then it goes into the base, which is some cooking liquid, the cream mushroom soup, bunch of poppy seeds. The grandmother's recipe calls for the herbs and pepper in the cooking liquid only, but Sarah adds them back in as fresh herbs into the casserole and then some greens.
Why do you like this so much?
I'm a fan of casserole anyway. I really love tuna casserole.
Oh.
Made with noodles?
Yeah.
But why do you like this one so much?
It's very different. It's really refined tasting. Like even though the base is canned soup, I think the thinning out with the cooking liquid, this cream sauce, this bechamel, fake bechamel base with chicken, and then top with the club crackers. There's like a lot of texture, and then she adds greens too, which is usually spinach because it wilts a little better than kale would.
She adds that before she crusts it?
Yes, before she bakes it. So you mix all those together, and then you bake it to heat everything through and to kind of brown the crust.
And when you refer to the cooking liquid, are you talking about the poaching liquid?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah,
so you poach the chicken in just water, salted water? Or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're making a very quick,
not even a little
quick
white
and dirty
wine?
Stock.
Sure.
Okay, well, sure. But that's not the way she makes it.
No, because we rarely have wine left over for cooking purposes, but that's another.
John, what do you think of this recipe? What do you think of this recipe? A little surprise Henry came with this kind of recipe?
No, not.
It's like out of a Good Housekeeping magazine.
It sort of is.
But you know, I kind of like those things a lot. And especially in the winter. It is comforting. And, you know, anything that is even akin to a tuna noodle casserole. I told you.
So for me, growing up, that was like this holy grail. You can't get it anywhere.
No, you have to make it yourself.
Yeah. And like my family was not making tuna casserole at home. We're making way different stuff. So like I would have it. I think I might have had it twice in my whole life at a friend's house. And oh my God!
Isn't it good?
What is this? And I spent my whole adult life chasing it around. You know,
Do you use cream and mushroom soup with that?
Yes.
Yeah. It's sort of an all-purpose soup, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is marketed less as an actual soup to eat a soup, and as a
something to add to a recipe.
It's a bechamel. Yeah.
How many recipes call for cream and mushroom soup?
It's interchangeable for making a bechamel, which is not hard, honestly. But you know, if you got a bunch of other stuff in the cupboard that's not even in the fridge, you know, in the cupboard, canned or dried, just open some stuff up and heat it up, and you're done.
I mentioned the polenta.
La polenta.
Now, polenta is very near and dear to me. It's something I grew up eating a lot, but it was still a treat. I wouldn't say my mother cooked it every week, maybe once a month, once every 6 weeks or so, with a marinara sauce and Parmesan on top. As simple as that sometimes with some sausage. But polenta, it gives you a good workout on your arm as you're stirring it in the pot and making it. There's so many things you can do with it. Here's one suggestion that's kind of a treat. You get fresh ricotta. You put a dab of ricotta in the bottom of a bowl. Warm the bowl up a little bit. Put the cool ricotta in there. And then put the polenta over the top of it. And just eat it. It's delicious.
Wow.
You have the smooth, cold ricotta underneath the warm, coarse polenta.
Holy cow. I've never had that.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
You can also do it with mascarpone underneath instead of the ricotta.
Wow.
So that's one thing. But my other Italian dish that comforts me is a good minestrone.
I keep soup and minestrone just to be with her alone, Angelina. Angelina, the waitress at the pizzeria.
A lot of people think of minestrone as, well, really pasta fagioli, which is pasta with some vegetables in it and some broth. But a good minestrone is more than that. It's mostly vegetables and involves no pasta. Some people do put pasta in the minestrone. Americans have this idea of what minestrone is from Progresso, open a can of minestrone, and there's usually ditalini in there with it. And it's not that. So I'm going to mention Marcella Hazan because anybody who cares about minestrone, a good minestrone, apparently knows this recipe, including you two guys.
Yeah, all independently, yeah.
Okay, so how did you come upon it, John?
Well, because she's my Italian cooking goddess. And early days when I was in California with my restaurants, I got all of her books, they came out.
Okay.
And just read them, you know, like the Italian Bible.
How about you, Henry?
I do remember specifically going to maybe a Barnes & Noble in high school and finding her, the cookbook, and like writing down, because I could never remember the order in which. There's a very specific order that a recipe calls for to add the vegetables for minestrone to the pot, and writing it down and like cherishing this piece of paper that I wrote it down on before cell phone cameras and stuff. Like,
yeah. And did you make it?
Yeah.
You've made
all the time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
My brother Joe is so strong on this, so big on this. He says, you know, make sure you follow it exactly.
Yep.
No substitutions. This has got olive oil. It's got butter, onion, carrots, celery, potatoes, zucchini, white beans, green beans, and shredded cabbage. Now, that's not something people associate with minestrone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to post the Marcella Hazan recipe in the notes of the podcast, so you should try that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other thing is Parmigiano Reggiano rinds. I don't know if that recipe calls for it.
You put it actually in the stock.
Yes. It flavors the stock, and it's just a completely different soup with and without it.
Yeah.
And the great thing is...
And tomatoes. I didn't mention the tomatoes.
Like canned tomatoes. And it does make the broth a little reddish, but it's not red.
Yeah.
The soup is not like a red soup.
No.
But the Parmigiano Reggiano rinds, you can find it. Like Whole Foods is one of the good things that Whole Foods is good for.
They'll sell the rinds?
Yeah. It's like $3 a pound, and you get a whole, you know, tub of rinds.
Boy, a difference that makes.
Yeah, you freeze them and use them exclusively for this.
Now, people don't understand. Like, you're not talking about grating that.
No.
We're talking about you put it in the broth, in the pot.
Yeah.
And
it's like a big bay leaf, if you want to, you know, and you take it out in the end, you know, like.
Yeah. So that's good. Those are three good things to keep you warm over the weekend.
Yeah.
And check out our recipes. I'm trying to think. There's some other things that are other dishes that are comforting. You know, people like mac and cheese, of course.
Make some Kraft macaroni and cheese, please.
Please make some Kraft macaroni and cheese.
It's nice and cheesy and it's really pretty easy. Please make some Kraft macaroni and cheese.
You mentioned chili. That's something
and chili. It seems like somebody waits for the chilly weather to make chili.
Yeah.
Right?
Cold, ain't it? Y'all want to take that chill off early? I got a traditional cowboy chili recipe, and it is good.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, all the soups. Sometimes I mentioned Sunday gravy a little while ago. I crave that when it's really
Sunday
cold.
Gravy.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this.
I don't remember that.
We had a little back and forth here. My understanding of Sunday gravy is like a... It's a tomato base. It's like spaghetti sauce with a whole bunch of meat in it.
Oh, yeah. That's Mrs. Minetta in Little Italy. That's what she calls her sauce, a gravy. Oh,
well,
yeah.
My buddy Josh from years ago, who was from Jersey, an Italian guy, Tornabene, he would make Sunday gravy, which was just, I mean, you know, everything, a sampling platter from the meat department, you know, in a long cooked tomato sauce, and it was just
I still do it. If I have a leftover pork chop, it goes in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Leftover chicken, pieces of leftover chicken you can put in there.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. We put a whole like chicken quartered in the pot.
Oh man.
Which is, you know, crazy if you think about it.
Oh man. That is so good. My mother would start it early on Sunday morning. We'd go to church, and by the time we got home, the kitchen would smell like this, and I'd look for a piece of stale Italian bread to dunk in it and get my hand slapped. But, you know, like 1 o'clock, we'd have it over spaghetti.
Yeah.
You know, it was great. With a pork roast or something like that. Even more meat. Because that was back in the days when you couldn't eat meat on Friday. Remember, John?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good thing to make on a football day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those all-day things because it
takes
all day to get that meat ready.
The slow cooker is wonderful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the heat, like if you do it on the stove, it warms the whole house up the whole day.
Yeah, that's true. So that's true.
You use that residual heat.
Well, I'm ready for some more cold weather. Yeah. And thank you, John, for bringing in what you brought in from Ireland. And Henry, thank you for that recipe too. What is it again?
Come on. Chicken poppy seed casserole. Try it.
Chicken poppy seed. No.
I will bring
you trust
some.
You. No, you don't understand. I might sound a little skeptical, but I totally trust you, food nerd.
So good.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Dan.
John Shields is a cookbook author, chef, and proprietor of Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art. Henry Hong, the food nerd, is food and beverage manager at the Baltimore Country Club. They join us once a month to talk about cooking and food. Check my blog post at BaltimoreSun.com for the recipes we mentioned during the show. That's it for now. For producers Steve Early and Queen Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking. Have a good weekend, and make sure you cook up some comfort food.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com. Or by calling 410-377-2966.